702. News and current affairs.
Ian Cameron joins me now, and he's Director of Community Safety at Action Society. Ian, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Aubrey. It's a great pleasure to be with you tonight. Look forward to chatting.
Tell me, how are you doing after that encounter with the minister a couple of months ago? Man, I never had a chance to talk to you.
Oh, man, it was a very interesting few months. Things, I must say, heated up quite a bit. But it's been an incredible experience, because I had the opportunity afterwards to really, really get stuck in with so many different communities on ground level. I was invited to so many townships across the country to see what their challenges are. And, it gave me a lot of insight. I had experienced a lot of it before because of some of the cases that we work with as an organization, but it really gave me a lot of insight. And then also, it was an incredible experience with the police on ground level, because they really started opening up and they started communicating with us and started sharing their frustrations and so on. So it gave me a far more balanced outlook, as to what potential solutions in the future might be.
Have you had any communication with the minister since?
Unfortunately not. We've written to him regarding certain matters that we are busy with, you know, things like the DNA backlog and so on and so forth. But there's quite a bit of a silence from his office. So unfortunately not. Work with the South African Police Service as such continues as per normal.
I suppose the reason why I'm asking that question, Ian, is, you know, the fight against crime is one that I think all of us ought to be engaged in. And if it were possible that whatever differences we may have in terms of how we do things, the modalities of doing things, but perhaps to remember that we are all on the same side, and that's the side of fighting against crime. My sense is I wish we were in a position where we could have more friends than enemies. And if people who are on the side of fighting crime are fighting, because I still maintain, I suppose, at some level that the minister is trying to fight crime, as you are, right? I would imagine that if relationships were mended in the interest of that fight against crime, the arsenal of weaponry against crime would be that much stronger. Do you get where I'm going?
I get where you're going, and I think it's a very relevant point, and I actually agree with you. I think the challenges that we have in terms of the current minister, and remember something, just a disclaimer. I think it's so important that people need to remember that it's not a personal fight or a personal debate or argument. It's purely based on performance. And I think the challenge that we faced actually with the last two or three police ministers was that it feels like you often just reach closed doors, or when you do engage in a discussion, the results or the promises that are made in those discussions just become null and void. You know, it just goes quiet.
Yeah.
And I think that's the frustration. Look, if we had that balance and the real open door to the minister and the police's management, I think we could turn the country around in actually quite a short time, because, you know, South Africans are in general good people. They are, I think they are fun. You know, they want to have a positive environment to live in. And I think there's a big impact in that. And the role that the private sector can play is also massive, you know. So there's a huge opportunity for positive collaboration.
Yeah. I really do hope that personalities such as yourself and the minister can find each other. I mean, I'm quite critical of the way that the minister does things, but I still am very, very aware of, I believe, a genuine desire on his part to see breaking down or disturbance of the escalation of crime in this country. But that does not mean we don't have frank and open conversations and give critique where we need to give it. Give me a sense of what you think of the stats as delivered and announced by the minister.
Yeah, and I think this is where it comes in regarding the critique, as you just correctly mentioned. You know, I think it's important that robust discussion is able to be had. And in this specific case, I think what bothered me before we get to the statistics themselves was the lack of a plan. You know, I didn't get the feeling yesterday when I listened to police management and the minister that there was really a plan. The only solution that they proposed was the fact that there are 10,000 new recruits coming in December. Now, that is a tiny, tiny, tiny part of a solution, and it's actually mainly a short-term solution. It's not a specialized capacity that's going to fast-track convictions or anything like that. And I mean, that might be a debate on its own, but that bothered me. So I think, you know, the statistics are bad. They are really are bad. And I think this is probably, if we look at this financial year that we're in now, most likely going to be one of the bloodiest, if not the bloodiest, year for the within the last two decades when it comes to murder. But yeah, it bothered me most that there was no sense of strategic direction or, you know, a solution attitude. And the other thing, Aubrey, that I think is important mentioning is that the Minister of Justice didn't play any role. You know, I think it's important that within the government space that there is collaboration between different entities and that they tackle this together. Even the Department of Social Development, for example, should play a role.
Do you think that departments function too much as silos? And therefore, the approach to dealing with the scourge of crime becomes fragmented. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think I've often been accused of it. You know, people say, oh, you only speak about the police. But I mean, that's my set of expertise. That's my focus area. But it's very important that we always remember that the police are not the only ones responsible for combating crime. You know, there are several departments which their key focus might not be combating crime, but might be to combat poverty or might be to challenge other social or economic ills that plague South Africa. So there are so many different, aspects that we need to take into consideration. And I think this is where the president actually can play far more of a role, you know, getting cabinet together and building an integrated approach between departments to say, you know, our core business is the following, and this is how we can have an integrated approach to combat crime and specifically violent and organized crime in South Africa.
Look, when I heard that in the three-month period between July and September of 2022, 7,400 murders took place. Yeah? 7,000 murders took place. That's 76 people being murdered a day in a matter of 3 months. And I imagine that that's just those that were reported, right?
Yeah, and to add to that, I mean, think about it this way, is that means that every hour between 3 and 4 people are murdered. So as you and I are speaking, chances are that 2 people have already been killed. That is how serious it is. I always try and give people context as well, because it's easy to just see it as a numbers game. Yeah. You know, we look at statistics and it's just another number and it's South Africa and we know there's lots of crime. But we need to imagine, if next to every number you had a name and you had a picture of a face, to remember that there's an actual human being there. And then you imagine every human being's family busy grieving about them. And then you start imagining the ripple effect of this. And I think that's where it's crucial that we somehow, and I don't always know how, because we're a severely traumatized society in South Africa, we need to make sure that we don't become so desensitized that people just become numbers. Because 7,000, man, that is
scary. That is really, really, really scary. You spoke of the fragmented nature of the way that we approach fighting different crimes. It also appears to me that even within the police themselves, there's a lot of fragmentation. So in other words, as much as you spoke of the fragmentation between the various ministries, social development, justice, police, it appears that in the police themselves, there's also a very fragmented way of doing things. What is your experience or understanding of that reality?
I think you're spot on. I think, you know, let me share what my experience is with them in certain areas in terms of ground level work. You know, if let's use the Cape Flats as an example, I've spoken to so many really good professional career police members that worked, for example, as detectives that specifically focused on gang-related activity, on other organized crime matters, and also the uniform members that worked as part of the anti-gang unit. And so many of them have shared the same story that, you know, as soon as they start getting success as a unit, they're either transferred or they are victimized or intimidated within the South African police service. So that's issue number one, or one of the issues, is the criminal intimidation element inside SAP. So that's point number one. Point number two is communication in the South African police service is really, really poor, and it's very, very slow. And we saw this in the July 2021 riots. I think that's the most relevant big or large scale example to us is things really just fell flat because there was zero solid central command and control, strong leadership. It just seemed non-existent. You know, cops were running around on ground level and they were actually left exposed and isolated by poor leaders. And then if you speak to different units, you know, if you speak to people in flying squad, for example, they don't trust people at stations. Stations don't trust flying squad. And those are just two examples. And then I think a last thing, remember there was an internal survey done in SAPS last year, and it was released by the minister's office, which I must commend them for releasing it. But it indicated that over 50% of cops don't trust their colleagues. And that's a very, very worrying thing, because that means you and I need to trust them, but they themselves don't even trust each other. So where does that leave us?
I've had conversations with police officers who've wanted to remain anonymous, not only on this platform, but on other platforms that I operate in, where there's a sense amongst career police officers that I've spoken to that the leadership of police themselves don't value or don't hold this profession in the appropriate esteem. In fact, one police officer said that, you know, we have people in the highest levels of command who are not police officers themselves, who have done no basic training as far as policing is concerned, who are then given these credentials, these titles of general, yeah, of brigadier, who've done nothing. And I could see that him tear up, right? I remember seeing this big, strong man tear up, saying, how then am I to respect somebody that's called a general that has never, ever held a pistol in their lives? And that person speaks of operational matters, and they have no understanding as to what is the story there. To what extent do you think that might be a part of the reason why the morale, at least in the police itself, and I have very, very deep sympathy for the cops themselves, because I think that there are many, many men and women in blue who are absolutely dedicated to the calling of fighting crime and enforcing the laws of this country, but they themselves feel sabotaged by, I suppose, what some may call political shenanigans?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's one of the biggest reasons for the destruction of the South African police. And in fact, I would go as far as saying it's one of the biggest reasons for the destruction of criminal justice in South Africa, the system in general. Minister Bekele himself is an example of such an appointment when he was the National Commissioner. The same with General, or so-called General Ria Piecha. You know, police members just couldn't take them seriously because they didn't understand the ground-level challenges that members were facing. And then, you know, suddenly a career member of 30 years or 20 years have to salute someone who came in from the outside and has never worn the uniform. They've never smelt the smells and felt the feelings and seen the sights that some of these cops see. And I think it's so important. Look, it's important to understand that there is a role for example, academic appointments. They have a role to play, let's say, in crime analysis or something like that. There's a role for different people. But putting someone in a operational role with zero police experience, and it's simply a political appointment, doesn't make sense. And unfortunately, that's what's happened to the South African police. I mean, although, as you correctly said, there are thousands of great cops on the ground, and it's so difficult because people always say, "Yeah, but everyone's not bad." But that's like us saying, you know, we can't complain about load shedding because luckily we have power now and then. We need to be able to hold them accountable. We need to call them out when things are wrong. But I feel sorry for the good cops, because just imagine the challenges, or the morale rather, that they face. And sorry, I have a mouthful, but you know, in Harare, in the Cape Flats, I spoke to a cop there this morning and yesterday, and you know, they tell me that they don't even have fuel for generators to put the lights on at night. So now you're in one of the most dangerous areas in South Africa, and it's not safe for you as a police member at a police station, and it's also not safe for victims to go there. So they are just literally and figuratively speaking left in the dark.
But then there are police officers, and the numbers are growing by the numbers of police officers, and we can talk about the reasons why that happens, who are taking bribes, who are on the take, who are involved in criminal activities themselves. We see it on a daily basis, videos of police officers taking bribes. On a daily basis, we see it. I get sent those pictures on a daily basis. What is being done, and what is the real cause of this rot in that manifests in the increase of those kinds of men and women in blue? We've been dealing, for example, for the last week or so, with allegations by a whistleblower by the name of Patricia Mashale, who suggests that she's uncovered a criminal syndicate of police officers who have stolen identities and so forth. I must hasten to say that the police and the IPED have been very, very clear to say that we've investigated the matter, at least the most high-profile one of the head of human resources, a Lieutenant General Dineo Mntsiye, that she's been cleared by all investigations. But there seems to be this abiding mistrust of even the highest levels of police management and their bona fides. Talk to me about that, Ian.
So I just feel that it's like you can't stick a plaster on a wound that needs an operation and then expect it to heal. You know, and in the South African Police Service, we can't try and, you know, have small wins on ground level and say we're going to make small operational changes, but then expect the entire ship to change direction into a positive direction. There'll need to be a massive change in terms of leadership. But before I speak about what the possible steps are there, you know, when I was writing my book the last few months, between 2013 and 2021, there's a figure that was spoken of in Parliament a few weeks or 2 months ago that said that between 2013 and 2021, a total of 10,000 cops were charged with serious criminal offences. So it's murder, rape, those types of things. And during the you know, the time after 2021 up until now, when the data was released, only 50 of those 10,000 members were actually suspended. Now, I'm not saying all of them were necessarily guilty, but could it be that 10,000 people are charged with serious offences and only 50 were suspended? It just doesn't make sense. Apart from the possible, you know, fact that, in my opinion, pending the investigation, they should have been suspended in any case, especially with such a serious offence. But, you know, it surely can't be that those were all just false allegations. And it just seems like those things aren't taken seriously. It's like the Shaul Kinyar murder in the Cape Flats.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that Minister Bekele wanted or is trying to classify that report is something that actually neutralizes the crucial role that Parliament plays and IPED plays to keep ground level and other members in the South African Police Service accountable. It's a serious issue, and the only way I see that changing is literally restructuring our entire South African Police Service leadership. We'll need to determine who was appointed because of merit, who was appointed because of political affiliation, and if it is the latter, it needs to be reconsidered. And then, obviously, we'll need to determine who was involved in corruption. So, literally, do polygraphs, that type of thing, to point you in the right direction.
Between July and end of September 2022, 10,590 rape cases were reported nationally. I want to underscore that and say that these were the ones that were reported, right? Because the unreported cases of rape probably...
702.
The Aubrey Masango Show.
Live, online.
Smartphones, DSTV.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
Apologies there. Between July and end of September 2022, 10,590 rape cases were reported nationally. And I want to say that there are those who believe that the number of unreported rape cases far outstrips that number. So if that number of reported cases is in the 10,000s, right? And by the way, compared to 9,556 last year in the same period, right? That means we're looking at an increase of 10.8% in reported rape cases. What does this say to us, Ian? And we are talking about a country that is in the throes of a GBV crisis. The president has just hosted a summit about a month or so ago around this issue, where activists were saying that absolutely nothing has been done. Well, the president was gracious enough to agree that very little has been done, but the people on the ground, the NGOs, were saying absolutely nothing has been done of any material value to the fight against GBV. And we're hearing that 10,590 cases were reported in July to end of September. What do you read into this reality, Ian?
Yeah? I mean, it's horrific. Remember that, well, a few years ago, I think it was the Institute for Security Studies, I stand to be corrected, I can't remember exactly, but they estimated that only 1 in 9 rapes are actually reported. So if we were to go on that figure, remember that rape is severely underreported, as with most sexual offences in South Africa. I would say you could probably, you know, multiply that with either, well, between 5 and 10, if not more. But it certainly is not an accurate reflection. I think the sexual offence pandemic in South Africa is absolutely massive. And it's actually quite sad if we hear the president acknowledge the fact that not much has been done, because, you know, it's almost like shortly after that he left to go and eat cake in England. It's just this nonchalant type of approach. And when many of the activists were asking questions, many of the ministers or responsible entities weren't there to give answers again, or it was a bit of a talk shop. So, you know, tomorrow kicks off, or is the start of the so-called 16 days of activism, yep, against gender-based violence. And You know, we launched campaigns with certain organizations in Mitchell's Plain today. And it was astounding, you know, to speak to victims, social workers and other, you know, victim supporters that all told us that, you know, the reality on the ground is that things are getting worse. They're working under more pressure. Cops can't get to all the cases and courts aren't geared to process these cases fast enough. And then you obviously have things like the DNA backlog, so on and so forth. So, again, it comes back to a leadership crisis. I don't think it is really the priority that government seems to say, because their actions just don't match the promises that they've been making over the last few years.
Ian, I mean, I hear the complaints about the fact that the president went to go and eat cake, and I sympathize with that sentiment. Because, yeah, you know, here's a guy riding around in a golden carriage, greeting everybody, having a dinner, and you mentioned this at the beginning of our conversation, that you didn't get a sense that there's a plan, right? That there was this announcement of these figures, and the only aspect of planning in this whole conversation seemed to be the announcement that there's going to be 10,000 more cops employed, right? And some people might understand this to be meaning that we're just going to have 10,000 more people to be inept, to be thrown into the mix of incompetency and all of those kinds of things. But what is it that we expect? What would an announcement by the minister that had the element of a plan have sounded like? And maybe to add to that, what would we have the president do, as opposed, of course, to being in Britain eating an English breakfast?
I would have flipped the script on the crime statistics process. So what I would have done if you put me there right now, and I had to sit there in a meeting with Minister Becky Pele and all the relevant entities, and just objectively, you know, sitting there and making suggestions. What I would have shared with them is to say, let's have the presidential summit by all means, but come to the table as the president and say, this is where we have failed. An honest reflection of failure, and you acknowledge that. That's point number one. It's almost like repentance, but you don't ask for forgiveness. You just come and say, this is the problem. But then you say, these are the practical solutions on ground level that we have proposed. We've had a strategic planning session with the relevant ministers, heads of departments, etc. They've received training for the past 6 months to a year in these specific fields. Our top three priorities to fix is, for example, the DNA backlog, I don't know, something like a rape kit shortage on ground level, whatever it might be. I'm just giving examples, yeah?
Right.
But then, you know, after that, you say, okay, now we want the NGOs to come forward. These are your liaisons to the, let's say, the criminal justice sector. And they are going to help you coordinate inquiries that you have. And this is the scope of inquiries that we will be focusing. We can't fix everything overnight. So these are the three things that you can inquire about and that we can help you solve in X amount of turnaround time. Let's say 72 hours, you have feedback. But you see where I'm going. Then we start having a mutual relationship of keeping each other accountable. The president and co can give those NGOs responsibilities as well. You know, give them things that they can take ownership of in conjunction with the state. And then you're creating synergy. And then we say, okay, the leaders of those sectors, in 3 months' time, we're meeting again. We're doing feedback. We're doing a report on have we managed, have we not? And Minister Becky Pele or whoever else needs to come in with feedback.
So let me just quickly jump in there. Other than shoot to kill, Or meet fire with fire. I think that's what he said. Meet fire with fire. Do you get a sense that there is a guiding principle, a foundational idea that is going to inform police crime fighting strategy at the moment?
Definitely not. Definitely not. On paper, there are many regulations, and there are a few, like a rural safety plan, or they're different plans, but the implementation of them is so to say zero. It just simply doesn't happen. There's no collaborative strategy in the South African Police Service, and unfortunately, I think the roles have been, or the lines have been blurred between what does a commissioner do and what does a minister do, because it seems like the national commissioner is kind of a lapdog at the moment.
I get this the same sense as well. And then, of course, crimes against children. And somebody was saying to me they felt as though that the minister was shifting the blame onto communities again. And while I agree that communities have a role to play in the fight against crimes, but it almost felt as though the minister was almost saying that it's because the communities aren't participating that we have these crimes. Let me read you some of the stats as far as crimes against children are concerned. He says, we as communities continue to fail to protect some of the most vulnerable in society, our children, says Minister Begicka. And that's why I feel that's where the blurring between the job of the politician, who's the minister, and the commissioner, who's supposed to give us the practical steps that the police must do. The whole thing about the communities is a political statement. It's not a conversation about the operations of the police. And maybe I'm going a little far here. But he says, between July and end September 2021, 287 children were murdered in South Africa. For the same period this year, the number was 315 children murdered, a 9.8% increase. He says last month the kidnapping, rape, and brutal murder of 4-year-old Bokabo Pupo, shocked the nation and the world, said Tele. A 4-year-old with so much to live for and look forward to. Her life cut short by a man who has since been arrested, he said. And then a whole lot of things, right? It sounds to me like there is no real strategy, no real plan, other than to say, fight fire with fire. Communities, you are to blame for these crimes, without really offering a solution as to what the police are going to do with all their big budgets and big guns in the fight against crime.
Yeah, and I think I think it's a very popular statement that he makes. It's something we try and gain. It's a cheap trick. You're trying to gain quick brownie points with certain parts of the public. But again, it's not a long term solution. And I to be very honest, I actually agree with parts of what Minister Becky Pele says. I also think sometimes the offensive, the offense of the South African Police Service can be more direct, to take on certain organized crime groups, gangsterism, etc. But that being said, purely saying it's the fault of communities, or shoot and ask questions later, those are irresponsible statements, and I think they're sweeping statements. And when you do that and you're not speaking in conjunction with some kind of a strategy, some kind of a solution proposal by your national commissioner, or whoever the experts are that work with the commissioner to implement these things on ground level, then it becomes a very dangerous, blame game. It's not for the minister to say that, because that is where, when communities, don't speak up when these things happen, when they don't come forward when they have information, You know, it's not only the police that need to be held accountable when communities are intimidated, when they want to speak up, but then we not need to start and to look at the circumstances in which those communities live. So maybe that's where social development comes in, and there are different departments then. So again, it comes back to the fact that they shouldn't work in silos. There needs to be some kind of a synchronized approach to, you know, to find a more wholesome solution.
Let's take some calls. Maxwell is in Pretoria. Good evening, Maxwell.
Good evening, Obs, and condolences to you and your family, Aubrey.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you. Appreciate it, Max.
To Ian, I've been dying to get the contact of Ian, Aubrey, in the sense that I want to expose something. There is a family in Pretoria North that from the 1st, they will be illegally be evicted from the place that they're staying. The architect of this person is a cop that is based at Tswana Dob Unit. And they don't want to follow the right process. They want to use illegal means to remove that family. In fact, this cop is Bruno, is being paid by Khan Development people in Brook Lane. So I was asking Ian maybe can take my number or one way or the other way. I wanted to give him all the details and information of the whole situation, where police Mohal to all the people are involved in harassing that family in the north. It's a very painful situation where even kids are involved in that situation as I'm talking to you now.
All right. And I think what we'll do is ask Ian to give you to give us his contact details at the end of the conversation, Max. So please listen attentively, and then you can then get in touch with Ian.
Or you give him my number. You can tell your producer to give him my number. I think it can be best as well.
Okay. Whatever works. But I think it's important for you to listen to the end and just take his numbers so that if he doesn't phone you, then you give him a call. All right.
100%.
Maxwell in Pretoria, thanks very much for your call, bro. Thanks very much. Ian, I see a lot of people looking for your contact details. Please give us those contact details at the end of this conversation. Miles is in El Dorado. Bro Miles?
Thank you, Bro Ops, and thank you, Mr. Cameron. Look, I hear and I listen to Mr. Cameron, and seemingly his head, his heart and soul is at the right place. What would he say when I suggest that in order to try and get whatever is happening to a manageable level, you need loyal leaders? From loyal leaders, you need loyal political leaders. From there, it will give birth to a loyal society. You know, in the past, the apartheid police officers were so loyal, you know, safeguarding an apartheid system. And I thought, in a new dispensation, we were going to have corps that were going to oversee a democratic, non-racist political dispensation. But and I was so wrong. You know, after that has been done, loyalty, everybody must be loyal to this country because this is all we have. And then thereafter, go back and train the police to oversee a democratic, non-sexist, non-racist political dispensation and look after them, remunerate them, take care of them, draw the line and say to the police, when you cross that line, you're going down because we've done everything humanly possible to look after you, to pay you well, to train you and you to be loyal to the country. And if you cross that line, you go down.
Yeah, Miles in El Dorado, thanks very much. Ian, how do you respond to both calls? So much to talk about. The increased numbers in kidnapping, which is a big, big alarming thing for me, because these are crimes that we didn't know so much in this country. I mean, I'm not saying that there's never been kidnapping, but kidnapping has become almost industrialized in South Africa. We are beating countries like Mexico, Somalia, and Libya in the statistics as far as kidnapping is concerned. Organized crime has become mainstay in this country. What do you say to the callers But what of all of these things around about leadership that you've pointed out? Where do we go? What do we do? I had calls yesterday from Reiger Park, where people were besieged by armies of what they call Zamazamas, right? With high caliber rifles. People scared to even come out of their houses because of the shootings that were taking place. I mean, lots of calls coming through yesterday. And they just aren't getting the help that they need just from violent crime, organized crime, kidnappings, child-focused crime. Where to from here, Ian?
So I think I'll give the contact details obviously at the end as you suggested, but in terms of the last caller, I agree with him. You can't, it's again, as I said earlier, you know, we can't expect to change things on ground level if it doesn't change at the top. And forgive me for being brutally honest about this, but, you know, I look at the current National Commissioner and the few times that I've had personal contact with him, I enjoyed it. I felt that he was insightful. I found that he was very knowledgeable about the South African police. And on paper, he has fantastic experience. But what bothers me about this is that he's been there for a year now, and I can't see any positive change. I don't hear anything about positive change. And it almost seems like he is still the quiet general that was always playing second fiddle to all the other previous national commissioners. We need to restructure the entire South African police service management. A skills audit needs to be done to determine whether people are the right people for the job. And I almost want to go as far as saying that anything from colonel upwards, let's rather say from brigadier upwards, needs to be audited. And once you can run it parallel to lower ranks too, but once that is done, then we can start saying, okay, we've cleaned up one level, we can focus on the next. Obviously, there are other things to focus on, like bringing back reservists, like making sure that there are more detectives, because currently the average amount of docket detectives have is over 300 cases per person. That's massive. But I would really focus on changing the leadership, you know, bringing back some form of pride, some form of discipline. And once we do that, I think we can turn things around. But for the current management team that South African Police Service, nothing will change.
So it appears that crime is winning.
To be honest, Aubrey, it is winning. I think South Africa is a breeding ground for career criminals at the moment. And I hate saying it because it feels like we're really pessimistic, but they don't leave us with other solutions, you know, other options. We offer help so much. We've tried to engage with government. It's just there's just nothing in return, and it must be a two-way street. You know, it's a mutual relationship.
Ian Cameron, thanks very much for joining us. How do people get in touch with you, Maxwell? Who wants to get in touch with you? And are you open to that kind of connection with members of the public?
Of course. I mean, we can't promise to solve everything, but we'd really like people to get in touch. They can. I think the easiest is to send an email to info@actionsociety.co.za, and then the team will either send it to me or to the correct team member, depending on what exactly the issue is.
Ian Cameron, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Really, really appreciate your insights. And looking forward to a conversation again. Director of Community Safety at Action Society, much appreciated, Ian Cameron.